Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Cal Nez Design, and hosted by Cal Nez himself.
Oh,
Yadish, God's people, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez. I will be hosting the show this evening, and I am inviting each and every one of you out there in the radio land or internet world, so to speak, while we're waiting for the guests to call in, I welcome all of you. So today is Wednesday, March the 5th, 2014. How is everything going for you? I hope things are going great. As far as for me, I am busy working away. We had lots of guests, a lot of interest out there, lots of callers, a lot of discussion on the Facebook page. Just as a reminder, I just want to let everybody know that this show is just absolutely gaining tremendous amount of listeners from all over the place, from not only just the Navajo Nation, but several other tribes are also listening in. And for all of those, I would like to welcome you to the show and welcome you to also call in. Even just a simple hello from wherever you're at, and it would be absolutely wonderful to hear from you. I am currently based out of the Salt Lake City area, but often go down to the Navajo Nation to visit. So I would like to thank all the previous callers who have called in, and also encourage you to also call again. I'm wondering what happened to Mr. Eugene Arthur. He used to call in quite often. Be nice, Mr. Eugene, if you're listening out there, please give us a jingle. And also like to put a call out there to Mr. Ed Vicente. Yate, a shout out to you, you and your family. I hope you're doing well. I see you're listening to or actually participate on Facebook. And for all those people who actually do get on Facebook, I really do appreciate that. And so while we're waiting for callers, we will listen to this song here.
No, no, no. Okay, listeners, again, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, the world voice of Navajo politics. This is Cal Nez, and this evening we have invited several people to be with us, and I'm looking forward to hearing them, hearing from them and the information that they're going to share. And my name is Cal Nez, and all you listeners out there, you're welcome to call in at 347-989-0048. So I will bring on the guests, and I just wanted to kind of set this up this evening. One of the very interesting things that I've been contemplating on is there's all this money that is being spent or actually earmarked for various different things. And if all the listeners and all the guests who are calling in, if you would please turn your radios down or your internet, because you'll get confused with a lot of the feedback. Again, the telephone number here is 347-989-0048. And you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. So back to the concept that I've been looking at. You know, I was on the Navajo Nation. We have, of course, the three-branch government. The three-branch government, basically, we have the office of the president, we have the office of the legislative services, and we also have the judicial branch. And so, as I am looking at it, of course, all of them have an office. And so I wanted to engage the Navajo Nation and all the listeners out there for people to begin thinking about some of the things. And again, this is my suggestion, or if you will, these are some ideas that I've been wondering about. And that was, and I'm sure that a lot of the information is going to come out as we continue to talk about this. And there's like, what, right now we have about $400 million out there that is for capital improvement. I hear that the chapters have their own funding, and the list goes on, and it's perplexing to me at times why, and even now that taxes are going up for the business, for now the junk food, and you just look across the board, the Navajo Nation has bought a mine. There's going to be some residuals coming from that. We have a gaming. And so it's very interesting to me as a Navajo citizen who's been doing work with the Navajo Nation for 27 years. And you look at the whole idea about why that the Navajo Nation does not have a Supreme Court building. Now think about that. We have the Office of the President, and that's there. And we have the Navajo Nation Council. They have their building. But is it because the way we feel about the Navajo Nation law, about the Navajo Nation justice? It would be nice to see a building of some sort. I believe the current location where they're at, does that constitute the type of Supreme Court building, or where our distinguished Navajo Nation judges are, our lawyers, and the entire Navajo Nation justice? It's very, it's of course very important to me, I think, as a Navajo citizen, whether you live here on the Navajo Nation or off the Navajo Nation. You look at the other governmental entities, even a small city like here in Salt Lake City, they've got Midvale, which is a suburb of the greater Salt Lake in the Salt Lake County in the state of Utah. They have a police department. They have a mayor's office. They've got even a courthouse. And when you walk into the courthouse, it's very nice. And, of course, the Supreme Court should have a nice-looking exterior, whether all of it's combined together, and somewhere that the Supreme Court justices can adjudicate their what they do for laws that are very, very important. And so, anyway, so I can go on and on about that, and I think you get the picture. All of you callers and listeners out there, Navajo Nation, a lot of you guys live on the Navajo Nation, some various different parts of the United States. I get constant email from all over the place. So this evening, my featured guests, I invited her, and again, let me just preface this, that I am not looking for anybody's specific law case. Those, you can call them directly, and whatever that process is, I'm not totally understanding exactly how those steps goes. But for this evening's show is just to introduce the Navajo Nation judicial branch and who's the justices, where they're located at, and how just the administration part of it and how they work with the Navajo Nation. And so that's really what this show is going to be about. And mostly that right now, I'll let her tell the story about where the Navajo Nation judicial branch is located at. I mean, that's not a criticism. That's not making fun. That's just the reality of what it is. And for me, I believe as a Navajo that the Navajo Nation judicial branch, or one of the most important branches, ought to have their own building. And so, you know, if you don't feel like that that's something that we need, you're welcome to call in and voice your opinion. And please make sure if you do call in and have a question for Karen that this is not a specific law or any things of that nature. So anyway, without further ado, I would like to introduce Ms. Karen Francis, who is a wonderful person. And I'm glad that she has taken the time this evening to introduce or to give us an idea and to tell us about the Navajo Nation judicial branch. Karen Francis, you have the floor. Would you introduce yourself and tell us what tell us everything? We're just anxiously awaiting.
Good evening, Cal. I do have a little time to talk to you all this evening. Again, my name is Karen Francis. I am the Government Relations Officer for the Office of the Chief Justice, which is under the judicial branch of the Navajo Nation. And as you mentioned before, the Navajo Nation has a three-branch government. There are the legislative and executive branches. And, of course, this evening I was asked to talk about the judicial branch. I am going to do a little overview of it, and I can talk about the Supreme Court complex project also for a bit. The judicial branch is made up of the district court, the Supreme Court, the peacemaking program, and the Office of Probation and Parole Services, as well as the administrative offices of the court. And our modern courts began with the Navajo Court of Indian Offenses, which was established by the Bureau of Indian Affairs in 1892. And our Navajo Nation court system was established in 1959 with trial courts. And then in the 1970s, a Supreme Judicial Council was added. However, in 1985, the Navajo Nation Council passed the Judicial Reform Act, which created the Navajo Nation Supreme Court, streamlined the court operations, and at that same time, it also abolished the Navajo Nation Court of Appeals and the Supreme Judicial Council. In 1982, the Peacemaking Court was established by vote of the Judicial Conference, and that is the judges. The word court was later removed because Navajo peacemaking, it was felt that the term court was not appropriate for that. In 2012, the Navajo Nation Council's Law and Order Committee approved an amended plan of operations for peacemaking that expanded their services to to include traditional peacemaking, Diné family group conferencing, and life value engagement teaching. The peacemakers themselves are selected by their communities through chapter resolutions, and they help the branch to provide services centered on traditional dispute resolution. These are the type of dispute resolutions that took place before we actually had a formal court system. In 2013, also, the Law and Order Committee approved the first ever plan of operation for probation services, and its purpose is to enhance the safety of the community by reducing the incidence of criminal acts by persons convicted of a crime, and to facilitate or perform needs assessments, and to provide case management, referrals, and probation and parole supervision for adult and juvenile client offenders. And I'm talking about the court system a little. The Navajo Nation operates a two-level court system. We have the trial court and the Navajo Nation Supreme Court, which is the appellate court. So the cases begin in the trial court, and then they can be appealed to the Supreme Court. Also, decisions of administrative agencies, such as Office of Hearings and Appeals and the Navajo Nation Labor Commission, can also be appealed to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is in Window Rock, but again, we have no hearing room, and we really don't have an office, a permanent office for it. But so the court often travels out into other areas and even to law schools to hold hearings. There are currently 11 judicial districts of the Navajo Nation, and each of these districts, they have the civil, criminal, and family courts. They have also the probation and parole services, and they also have peacemaking program services. And these judicial districts, in 1988, there were districts created in Chinle, Crown Point, Kayenta, Shiprock, Cuba City, Window Rock, and Rayma. And at that time, Rayma also included Alamo and Tehachapi. But in 2006, Alamo and Tehachapi satellite courts became one judicial district. So Alamo and Tehachapi are one judicial district, but they have two courts within that district. And then in 2007, Dilkon and Annis judicial districts were also established. And then the latest one in 2012, the Vic Eugene Judicial District was created as the 11th Judicial District of the Navajo Nation. And that one is, I think they're located actually in Whippoorwill right now. Three appellate justices sit on the Supreme Court, and this is headed by the Chief Justice, and he is also the Chief Administrator of the Judicial Branch. So he supervises the judges, and he heads the judicial branch. Some of his duties include preparing the budget and setting and implementing policies and just overseeing the branch operations. Currently, the Chief Justice is Herb Yazzie, and he has been serving since he was confirmed as the probationary Chief Justice by the Navajo Nation Council in April 2005. His permanent appointment was confirmed by council in October 2007. So that's how long he has been serving as the Chief Justice. The Supreme Court also has Eleanor Burley as an Associate Justice, and she was confirmed for a probationary appointment in July 2008 and for a permanent appointment in October 2011. And she was also a district court judge before she was an Associate Justice. The third seat on the Supreme Court is currently vacant. So that's kind of a rundown of the judicial branch. As I had said, that the Navajo Nation created our own court system in 1959, and the day that it became effective was April 1st, 1959. So we're coming upon the birthday of the court. And each year, the judicial districts, they hold Justice Day events at their respective courts. And these are going to be coming up on April 1st. Crown Point and Window Rock Judicial District will be holding their Justice Day. April 3rd, the Eugene will be holding its Judicial Justice Day. April 4th, Kayenta, Cuba City, Lee, Dilkon, and Rama are planning to hold their Justice Days, and Alamo is going to have a Justice Day on April 17th, and Tehachapi on May 2nd. Other Justice Days will be announced, and you can check our Judicial Branch website for updates, announcements, or changes in that schedule, and if there's any changes to the dates. Usually, they will have open house, maybe serve some refreshments. A couple of them will have presentations or fun runs, things of that nature. They all celebrate it in a different way. And talking about the Supreme Court complex, the Navajo Nation judicial system for decades has been viewed as a leader in tribal court adjudication. However, the Supreme Court has never had a formal space to hear oral arguments. And for many years, the Supreme Court, the administrative offices of the court, and probation and parole services have been located in modular buildings. And there's never been a permanent facility.
Hey, Karen, I'm gonna have you hold that thought, because that's the next segment that I want to talk about. Now, you've given us the information and absolutely wonderful, kind of the who is serving and how the, but let's get into that discussion during our next break. And so, Karen, if you wouldn't mind holding here for a few minutes while I get these little segments in, and I got just one quick update from a guest that is going to be with us. So the next segment of the discussion is what I'm really looking forward to. And again, for all you callers out there, if you want to ask about that, and that is the actual building, the, you know, anyway, we'll talk about that.
And you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by Cal Nez.
Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez, your host, and we are the world voice on Navajo politics. And thanks again to all the listeners out there. You're welcome to call in. The telephone number is 347-989-0048. And we are talking about the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch and also the Supreme Court building. And we will get Karen back on the phone here with us very soon. We appreciate her giving us information. And again, if anybody has any questions, this is not about any specific how to file anything of those law-related nature, but more or less just information as to where they're located, who they are, and it's good to know who the Supreme Court justices are. So, again, but in the meantime, I have a guest that I invited, and I asked her to give us an update, and that is Ms. Amanda Blackhorse, and she is going to give us the latest rundown on the Navajo Nation, on the Washington R word. Amanda Blackhorse, yes, welcome. Yate, could you please just give us a rundown? What's going on lately?
Oh, Yate, Cal. Good to talk to you this evening. And for those of the listeners who don't know who I am, my name is Amanda. I am a Shiha, born for Tachini. Titna Jinni are my Chays, and a Shiha are my Nellies. I am from Big Mountain. And I'm a plaintiff on a case, Black Horse et al. Versus Pro Football, which is before the Trademark Trial and Appeals Board. Basically, we're asking the Trademark Trial and Appeals Board to cancel the term, the name of the team, the Washington Redskins. We want them to cancel that name because it is racist, because it is offensive to Native American people. In this day and age, there is no room for any of that in professional sports. And so this Friday will mark exactly 1 year from the last hearing that was held in Alexandria, Virginia, where we went before the Trademark Trial and Appeals Board and presented the last bit of our information. And we have been waiting for the board to make a decision on whether or not they are going to cancel the name of the team. So basically, the team can call themselves whatever they want to call themselves. They are, this is America, this is the land of the free, you know, we have free speech here, they can do whatever they want. What we're saying is, you know, there is social responsibility here as well. And as a way to get them to make that change, because they have to kind of make it, they have to make that change on their own, or unless the NFL tells them to do it. But the NFL is pretty much on their side. So what we're doing is we're getting them by their name, and we're saying you cannot trademark this. There's no, this name should not have federal protection. And so if we do win our case and it is granted by the board that they cannot trademark that name anymore, they will basically lose out on a lot of money, because much of their revenue comes from merchandise. So now anybody can make a jersey, you know, with the Washington R word, you know, with a racial slur. It can be made by anyone. So the team will be out at a great loss. So right now we are waiting for a decision to be made. We were told then it could be anywhere from 3 months to a year. And like I said, this Friday it's going to be exactly 1 year. Since then, as people and listeners probably know, there has been much discussion on this issue nationally. And I feel and I have a sense that it's kind of a younger generation who are standing up and saying that we should be respected in the media. We deserve to be respected on a national level. See, people sometimes say, well, what's the big deal? It's just the name of a football team. But really, it's not. When you go to these games and you see the culture around all of this, there is no respect for Native American people. There's absolutely no respect. What it is this appropriation of this fake sort of image of who we are, you know? And that's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't understand it, I would tell you to go to a game and see for yourself. See how people treat you. You know, I went to a game back in 2005, and it was the Kansas City Chiefs and the Washington R word, and they were playing, and we basically stood there quietly, silently, and said, we are offended by your name and the racism that we received and the way that people spoke to us, and completely had, they had so much disregard for us as a group of people. It was alarming to me, and it was surprising to me, and it opened my eyes to all of this. And so I think that people now are starting to catch on this issue. You know, it is a huge issue. It is a big issue, because how we are respected in the national community and in our own community really depends on people's view of us. So what we're basically saying is, we will show you how we want to be respected. We will demand our respect. We're not just going to, you know, say, oh, well, at least they're thinking of us. Oh, at least they're honoring us. They think that we're brave. No, we're so much more than that. And we need to make sure that we make our voices heard on that issue. And so, I mean, there has been so much press on this and so much discussion on this. We've had a tremendous amount of support, and I'm just so happy. A couple of months ago, one of the huge victory, I think, in this issue is the Dene Medicine Man Association endorsed us, and they said, we support you in this issue. And seeing it from that perspective really gives me a lot of strength, and I feel really good about that. That, you know, my Nelly, who's 98 years old, doesn't know anything about sports. She doesn't know anything about mascots. You know, she grew up herding sheep, you know, back on the sheep camp, and she's just like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. I don't understand this whole sports, you know, what people, I don't see the fun in it, you know. And I'm like, well, I explained it to her, and I said, their name basically is, you know, what a redskin is a scalp of a Native American person. That's what it is. The literal translation into Navajo is a teases. That's exactly what it is. And she was like, Ha'ati, Yadisan, Oba Iho Dabajit. You know, and for her to understand it without being a fan of football, that to me spoke a million words. And so I just want to thank you, Kel, for having me on this evening so I can talk about this issue, because it's very important and it affects everybody, you know, not just natives out in the urban communities, but natives on the res too.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's very nice, Amanda. Thank you very much. And just real quickly, where do people call you and how do they get in touch with you to give you some support?
Well, I do. I don't want to give out my personal information, but I am on Facebook. You can look me up there. Send me a message if you would like maybe some more information, or if you, for other media inquiries, you can do that. And basically, that's really my only other, my only media outlet at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, while we somehow lost Karen, so while she's waiting to call back in, just in closing, I just want to be able to address this one issue that I keep hearing from people, and I want to be able to have you share the reasons why that your organization or you and your group, you're pursuing, and why that the Washington R word is an offensive name. Because here's some of the people who go, you know, it's just a sports team. We don't care really about any of that. There are bigger issues that we're facing as Native people across the nation. What do you tell those people?
Well, the name has a long history behind it. It was used publicly in, you know, as early as 1863 you know, for the government to solicit individuals to kill Native American people. So basically, our race was being exterminated. And so they couldn't do it all on their own, so they asked people to help them out and said, hey, I'll pay you some money. You know, I'll pay you more for a man, a Native American man, and then a woman, and then a child. And, you know, bring back the scalp and show me that you made the kill, and I will pay you. People could actually make a lot of money doing that and being bounty hunters. And so this is a practice that is in our history, and people don't really know that. And that's the thing. This sort of thing has been kind of hidden from us. And so that's kind of the origin of the term the R word term. Now, as far as what's the big deal, all of that, you know, we have more important issues or whatever. Most of the time, people who say that really are only complaining, I feel. And if we are going to work on important issues, then let's get to work on it. There's nothing wrong with supporting your fellow Native people. You know, we need to start doing that more. We need to support each other, especially if our cause is to better the lives of other Native American people. And I don't understand why people say that. Instead of putting your energy into saying no, why don't you put your energy into educating people more? And so I am working on many issues. This is not the only thing that I am working on, as are many other advocates who are working on this and many other people who have paved the way for me to do this sort of work. And, you know, we have people who have advocated on this issue for many, many years who have done tremendous work in Native American community. Suzanne Harjo has done tremendous work and policy in Washington, D.C. for Native American people and has been the one to push this issue. She's been on the forefront of this issue since, it's, you know, for over 20 years. And so people are working on those. I think that saying that we have other issues is just an excuse to not do anything. And I think that we need to start working together more on those issues so that we can get out of this state that we are in as Native people, you know? It's that simple.
Hello, I'm not sure what happened. We lost connection there. I apologize, everybody. But I am back. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, the wonders of Internet and also radio signals and cells. And so please bear with us. I appreciate everybody listening in, and also Amanda. And I'm sure you held the ground pretty well. I appreciate that, Amanda. I was watching the your segment there while I was trying to reconnect. So, Amanda, thank you very much. I hope that you had everything that you wanted to share and to give to the people. So, again, Amanda, thank you. Are you there? Okay. I guess she is not on air. So, anyway, so, again, I want to thank Amanda Blackhair for giving us an update there. So I will get back to Karen Francis. I assume that this is Karen. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am having technical difficulties, so, you know, I don't know how long I can be on.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I understand. So, again, you know, one of the things for all the listeners out there, we appreciate everybody listening in, and it looks like there's a lot of people who are chiming in right now to join us, and we also want to welcome Mr. Tino Redsteer for being on. He always calls in and listens in, and I ask him to say a few things, but he says, I just want to listen. So I appreciate that. And so, again, we are talking about the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch. Karen Francis is with us from the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch, and she introduced herself, talked about what how the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch is set up in relation to all of the chapters and local agencies. I guess that's how that they're set up. And so now to the big question, why doesn't the Navajo Nation have a Supreme Court building. I'm only referring to, shouldn't there be, where are you guys located at right now? Let's start from there first, Karen.
Well, we are, the Supreme Court is located in two separate locations right now. There are offices at the corner of Indian Route 12 and Highway 264 in Window Rock. And then there's also another part of the Supreme Court office located near where the Vital Records is at. So it is a hardship for the Supreme Court to have employees in one section and the justices at another. You know, it's not very efficient, but that is what we have to make do with. And also at the office at Indian Route 12 and Highway 264, there's also the administrative offices of the court and the probation and parole services. So that is where we are currently located.
Okay. And in reference to, I'm sure that things are probably in discussion or has been in discussion for, I would assume, probably many years, Karen, about having or constructing the building or combining the monies. Can you give us an update on that? And if there's any, are there any discussions along those lines? You kind of alluded to that right before we all lost the break here.
Well, the proposed complex, it is construction ready. As you're saying, this has been in discussion. In 2006, the Navajo Nation Council appropriated $1.5 million in planning funds, and that was used to hire an architect to plan and design the concept. So we do have the design, and the final design is a Supreme Court building that embodies the Diné ideas of justice and conflict resolution. So this proposed complex, it will utilize 9 acres in Window Rock, and it is arranged in a campus-style setting. There would be facilities for the Supreme Court, the peacemaking program, the administrative offices of the court, and probation and parole services, and also an amphitheater. And the existence of this facility would enhance confidence in the judicial system and would also enhance public safety at the same time. So also, the Resources and Development Committee of the Council, they had approved a priority listing of road projects through the Bureau of Indian Affairs Indian Reservation Roads Fund, and the access roads for the Supreme Court are included on that priority listing. And of course, with technical assistance from Navajo Nation Design and Engineering Services, we've been able to secure the necessary surveys and legal descriptions, and the land has been withdrawn. So that we are project, you know, we are ready for construction. The main thing lacking right now is funds. Representative Albert Hale had introduced a bill into the Arizona House of Representatives seeking to appropriate $7.5 million for this complex. But I need to get an update from him to find out where that is at right now. And, of course, there is the Navajo Nation Council has been looking to approve an infrastructure plan, and the Supreme Court could also be included in that. I believe it is included right now, but the council still has to act on that. So, of course, that will not be final until it goes through that appropriate process.
That's interesting. So there is... It's project ready. And where's this building is going to be at, if it's built?
Well, the proposed site, it is across where the current Window Rock Judicial District and Police Department are located. So it's across that area.
and why it sounds to me like it's kind of bouncing around different places and trying to get some money. So rather than looking inside of the Navajo Nation government while the Navajo Nation is earmarking to build new buildings, also to build casinos, wonderful structures that are out there, why isn't the Supreme Court building a priority?
I can't answer that question. I don't know why it is not prioritized. It's really, I guess that's a question for those decision makers.
And what do you suppose it's going to take to move this along? And now it sounds to me like the Navajo Nation is looking outside of the Navajo Nation to state government to help the Navajo Nation build a Supreme Court. Like you just mentioned, you're contacting Albert Hale.
Well, he did introduce the bill, so that is one option. Of course, we don't know if that will be appropriated. So we're looking at all kinds of ways that we can possibly fund this, because it is very much needed. So we are looking at the different options, and one option is to seek state funding. And if that doesn't work out, we'll look at other options as well.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Well, Karen, I'm going to put you back on hold, and I've got another guest that has called in. And in the meantime, I would probably recommend you plug the phone in again and see how much life you can get, how much time you can give us again. So, Karen, we'll continue this discussion. I think it's very interesting and very interesting. That's the only other word I can think of why it's not a priority. So I'll be right back to Karen Francis, and thank you for being here with us. And again, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and the telephone number here is... to give us a newsflash. Bill Donovan.
Cal, I'm going to say something that may shock some people. Not everyone is treated equally in the Navajo justice system. Here's one example. For the past couple of months, former members of the Navajo Nation Council and one current member of the council have been going through ethics hearings over the discretionary fund scandal. Many of them have reached a settlement with the tribe's special prosecutor, and those former council delegates have had to make restitution and are prohibited from running for office for the next 5 years or so. But that's not the case with the sole current council member. His name is Nelson Begay, and he represents Lukachukai, Round Rock, Salee, Reed Fields, and Rock Point. Between 2003 and 2011, he received almost $350,000 to distribute to his constituents from this discretionary fund. He was accused, however, of giving $4,000 of that to his family members and entering into agreements with other council members to give his family members another $7,800. Under the deal he made with the special prosecutors, he agreed to pay back $4,450 in restitution. That's about 40% of what he was alleged to have taken illegally from the fund. But that's in line with the percentage of restitution everyone else was paying. But here comes the difference. Instead of being forced to give up his position on the council, the deal allows him to continue in office. There are also no restrictions on him about running for his position this year's election. as for paying the restitution, he is being allowed to take it out of his deferred compensation benefits, which means that he will see no cutback in pay during the time he's in office. The special prosecutors, of course, have made no comment on why his deal was different than the others. But the one thing it will do is pave the way for the other 11 members of the current council charged with similar crimes to make a deal rather than take the chance on an ethics hearing or a criminal trial. With no worry about being removed from office and being allowed to run again, the council delegates will easily be able to pay any restitution without draining their pocketbook. The question, however, is whether these plea bargains will sit well with the majority of tribal members who have been pushing for those who have been charged to be removed from office. This is Bill Donovan, the newsflash from the Navajo Reservation.
Bill Donovan. Very, very interesting thoughts and something for us all to think about. And I appreciate Mr. Bill Donovan always sharing us a very interesting, shocking sort of a news. So, again, I want to thank Mr. Bill Donovan. And this evening we have Ms. Karen Francis from the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch, and we're talking about the Judicial Branch, and the discussion right now is why we don't have a building, and they are now currently, it looks like they're spread all over the Navajo National and Window Rock at several locations, and so there's monies that are why, you know, again, I guess why that it's not a priority for Navajo Nation to build a building. Just curious what it would take for us to get the Navajo Nation leadership to start looking at funding the Supreme Court building. I think it's just it's a no-brainer. I mean, why don't we have a building? And it'd be nice to have it right there in Window Rock so that it does show an atmosphere of respect for law and order. It shows respect for a segment of our Navajo, the Navajo culture, which is now they have instituted the peacemaking, which is a very unique thing within a governmental process that the Navajo Nation is using part of its culture to institute a an adjudication of a law or a case or, you know, those sorts of things that it's addressed at the peacemaking. And so, Karen, do you want to, for all those listeners who are joining in right now, just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you think it's going to take to get the this thing a reality, a building for the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch?
Well, the Navajo people do have to make it known that this is a priority, that this is something that they want, and I think that is the way that we can eventually get this funded and constructed.
Yeah. I know that the Supreme Court justices are very private people, and that's how that they're treated. And they, of course, they exercise their particular role in the law, in the judicial system. And I'm just curious. So are you saying that currently, because the way that it's set up, the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch, that they are now either going to borrowed courtrooms off the Navajo Nation and also to the localized courthouses? Am I correct on that?
The Supreme Court, they hold hearings where they can. For example, they could hold it at the administrative offices of the court conference room, which is very small.
And in the past, they've held them at law school. So it's before I also worked for the judicial branch, I know that they held them at a chapter house before. So it is in various locations, wherever that they can find.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, I don't mean to sit here and chuckle at it, but it just is, you know, it is just amazing to me that, you know, it's, you know, that the Navajo Nation does not have even a decent facility, or, well, I shouldn't say decent. I mean, there's some nice places that are in Window Rock, but what I'm getting at is just that we don't have a place where the justices can call home, so to speak. And so now, in terms of the general public, I mean, is there anything else that you want to share with them in terms of this whole, this need? And, of course, you guys got probably just, you know, thousands upon thousands of things that are related to law that you're addressing right now, so maybe it's not that big a deal to the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch.
It is a very big deal. We do need a Supreme Court. We need offices for our staff. You know, we would like if we could get funding, and as I said, we're trying to find different ways that we can get this project realized. I do thank you, Cal, for allowing me to speak on this issue. So, you know, if the Navajo people would also assist us in asking for a Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, again, I do appreciate it, and so for sharing this information with us, Fit. And so I would urge the general public, and I'm basically am, you know, taking this initiative as a public awareness for that there is a need. I mean, I really honestly believe that in order to streamline, in order to have a place where the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch can be housed, and not only is it going to give an impression of a real pristine law and order facility, but even just the respect from the outside world for people coming to the Navajo Nation, coming to Window Rock, for them to sit in on a Supreme Court case with a very distinguished looking building. They walk inside, it has an atmosphere of that, with a lot of integrated Native American or actually Navajo culture ways. And you go inside and have our Supreme Court justices sitting there, where has that appropriate look? I was looking on the website where I saw the one of the courthouse, I believe it's Delcon, and they have a unique and a very, very architecturally sound, beautiful, and it looks like an outside of a hogan. There's a lot of very traditional motif materials that are all integrated into that, and I'm hoping that these designs that you guys have had that type of a look. And of course, a lot of the other locations, they have marble and, you know, those real heavy stone-like things that built out of these things. But, you know, of course, I'm sure the Navajo Nation Court, you know, this building that we're talking about could have an atmosphere, I mean, have a architectural design that integrates a lot of those Navajo culture materials. We have sandstone, we have, you know, logs, and all sorts of things, but I know it's there. So, Karen, I absolutely do support what you guys are doing there. I support that you guys are actually having this drive to be able to give the Navajo Nation's third branch a house, a home, the location where they can call their own. And so, you know, I'll do, and I have listeners out there who I'm sure that they can call their legislative leaders and say, hey, you know what, we have $4 million that we're floating around out there. Why not take that and build a building and borrow? There's so many different ways, but I think the need is there. So, again, Karen, thank you very much. And is there anything else that you want to add here in closing, Karen?
Thank you very much, Cal, and thank you to the listeners as well.
Okay, and where can they call you and reach you or call the office?
I can be reached at 928-871-6920. And our website is www.NavajoCourts.org.
Okay. Thank you very much, Karen. And we will we'll probably bring, you know, have you call back in and say, hey, we got to, you know, we're hoping here that there's some money out there. So I hope you're open to that. Thank you again.
Okay. Thank you, Cal.
All righty. Hook on. All right. There you have it. That was Ms. Karen Francis, and just giving us some information about the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch and what I'm calling the need for a Supreme Court building. Why not take some of the money that's out there floating, or, you know, that's, we're talking about millions and billions of dollars that are, you know, being expended, and why not have even a fundraising? There's many different creative ways to say, hey, I am buying, or, you know, that people can donate and buy a tile to pay for it and have their name on it, and they donate $50 or so. And there's so many different creative ways. I mean, but the bottom line is however we do it, why doesn't the Navajo Nation Judicial Branch have a home? I believe they should have a home. I believe that that's going to give a very respectable presentation of our Navajo Nation government, not only for the inside of the Navajo Nation appearance, but also, you know, how we present the law to our own people, but more so how that we look to the outside world. It'd be nice to have senators and whoever come to these, and we bring the people to our courts, to our system, to say, hey, you know what, this is how the law ought to be adjudicated, and so forth and so forth. So, again, I would urge you to call in. Tonight, as we usually have, in all the past, we have always had Ms. Marley Shabala. I apologize for not having her on last week, and she was on the phone with us, and she, you know, obviously had to do other things, so I'm glad that she's back. Marley Shabala from Marley Shabala's Notebook. Marley, welcome back. What do you have for us this week?
Oh, yata'e, Cal, and yata'e to all of your listeners there. This is Marley Shabala, Tohe Gwini and Shmo Nach Ezra team. And this week, there's a lot of buzz happening here in Winder Rock concerning new legislation for the removal of speaker names by the council. It's specifically to remove Delegate Johnny Nays as speaker. Sometimes I think that people don't realize that he is a council delegate. He is on equal footing as the rest of the council, and they are the ones that selected him to be speaker. The first time that they came into office, they selected him to be speaker, and then he ran again after 2 years, and they selected him again. But For the listeners that aren't familiar with what's been going on with Speaker Johnny Nays, back in December, the Navajo Nation special prosecutors filed criminal charges against him related to the misuse, the alleged misuse of the Navajo Nation discretionary fund. And the discretionary fund was identified as emergency assistance for students, elders, veterans, those individuals that are in dire need of financial assistance. Some of the requests that I came across were from elders needing wood during the winter. Some were from grandparents asking for help to purchase winter coats for their grandchildren so they could go to school. Some were from college students needing assistance with tuition or books, even, you know, the rent or, you know, gas, and then some individuals needed help with burial assistance, funeral. And so, and then the veterans, they often would ask for transportation costs because they have to travel off reservation to hospital. And so that's what that money was identified for. But there was the special prosecutors filed criminal charges against several of the council, former council delegates, and one of them was Speaker Johnny Nays, related to those funds that they had created this scheme, whereas I'm like, there you have Delegate A and Delegate E, or B rather. And so Delegate A and B say, well, we know we're not supposed to provide financial assistance to each other or to our own family members, but what we'll do is we will, if you give my family members some money, then I'll give your family members money. So that's what the charges are involving Speaker Nays, and there were several council delegates named in the 10 bribery charges against him, plus one of conspiracy to commit bribery. And that those initial charges was what prompted Council Delegate Alton Shepard to sponsor legislation number 0003-14, which was for the council to remove Delegate Johnny Nays as Speaker. And then, but that needed 16 votes. It needs two-thirds votes. And they didn't get the two-thirds votes. Instead, they got 12 in favor and 11 opposed. And so it didn't happen. And then that was on December 28th. And then on February 18th, former council delegate Raymond Joe pled guilty to his bribery and conspiracy to commit bribery charges. And he was named in Speaker Nays' criminal charges. And if you read former council delegate Raymond Joe's guilty plea, he states specifically that Speaker Nays knew exactly what was going on. And he, this is like a court record, and it's there, and actually I put it up on my website, and you can look at the actual legislation because it's attached to the new legislation. And according to the court record, he specifically stated that, let me look, here it is, okay. He specifically said that, I knew that a council delegate could not lawfully authorize financial assistance directly to his or her children or family members, and so I agreed with other delegates to provide each other's children and family members with financial assistance money as described in the complaint. And he said that from October 2007 to January 2009, he authorized payments of $10,000 from the discretionary fund to Council Delegate Johnny Mays' family. And he said that in return for him doing that, that Council Delegate Johnny Mays would use his discretion as an elected Navajo Nation official to provide financial assistance money directly to me and my family. And so, and so after that came out, there was people were already wondering if Mr. Delegate Shipper would again bring back up his legislation, because that was one of the statements that he made. And I did an interview with him, and he said that he had met with Speaker Johnny Mays, and that it was over former Council Delegate Raymond Joe's guilty plea, and but that's all he would say. And that was on January 21st. And then on Monday, I received a press release from Delegate Alton Shepard that he sent out to the media. And in his press release, he said that he was sponsoring new legislation, and this new legislation is number 0069-14. And it's basically the same legislation as the one that didn't get the 16 votes. But this legislation, though, has the actual guilty plea agreement by former Council Delegate Raymond Joe, and Delegate Shepard said that he sponsored this legislation because several of the Council Delegates who supported Mays were now saying that after Delegate Raymond Joe's guilty plea and specifically naming the speaker, that they would support his removal. And
wow.
And what happened, though, was, you know, it made it even more suspicious, or, you know, more suspicion cast on Speaker Nays by himself, was that this legislation, and you have to read a lot of the legislative process, how legislation goes through the process. And once legislation receives a number, this legislation got its number on January 28th, February 28th. And so it should have been immediately assigned committee review and then posted, perhaps on March 1st. But it wasn't posted until this afternoon. And Mr. Shepard in his press release said that, you know, he was waiting and waiting for a response from Speaker Nays, and it seemed like that the Speaker was delaying it. And he felt that the Speaker's staff were putting the Speaker in a conflict of interest dilemma by saying that, oh, he needs to review it before it's posted. But it's about him. I mean, so, you know, it's an obvious conflict of interest. And so I've been calling the Speaker's office and asking for an interview, and also why this legislation wasn't posted. And another thing that popped up, too, was that a press release from the Speaker's office about the vote on the first legislation that came out in January. I was there, and I got a copy of the vote, and it was announced that it was 12 in favor, 11 opposed. And then a press release that came out on the 31st, which was 2 days after the council vote on the removal of the speaker, and that vote was 11 in favor and 12 opposed. And so I called, as part of my question, I said, why is this vote different? And then I was told by the communications director, Gerard Tutson, that Delegate Dwayne Sinigeny had written a memo to Speaker Nays and asked to have his vote changed from a yes vote to a no vote.
Okay.
I know, and I was like, what? You said...
Wow. So in other words, this whole thing is not really dead as what we all were told, that they were going to keep, and now they're basically reloading again right now to address this whole thing. And now, you know, it's quite interesting to me as you're telling me this, that as it's going to go through the process, this legislation sounds to me like it might just go through this time.
Yeah, because all of a sudden this afternoon, after I've been calling around and asking for the memo concerning Delegate Dwayne Sinigeny's vote change and where is my interview with the speaker and why isn't this getting posted for public comment, because it has to go to the Navajo Committee on their meeting on March 13th. And by law, that any legislation has to be up for 5-day review before it can go to a committee for any kind of action. And so, you know, now that, and it was posted. So if any of the listeners want to go to the Navajo Council website, they'll be able to look at it and, you know, it's there for anyone to go ahead and see, and they can read it and they can comment on it, you know, whether they support it or they don't support it, and they can say why they do or why they don't. But all you have to do is go to the, it's all one word, it's NavajoNationCouncil.org, and that's
yeah.
The council website. And then
and it is on there right now.
Huh? Are you on there?
It is on there right now.
Yeah, it's on there. It got posted this afternoon. I went online and looked for it. So you would look for legislation 0069.
0069. Okay. Wow. So, that's interesting because, you know, I went on to their Facebook several times, or not Facebook, but to their website, and really did not see, if at all, any legislation being posted up there for people's comments. So it sounds to me like it's there. So all you listeners, this is your opportunity for you to engage your ability to link in and get your comments posted on the Navajo Nation Council in reference to this. So now it looks to me like it's going to go through the entire system again. And is there a timeline that you're thinking about? I mean, that you think this is going to take, Marley?
Yeah, well, that's it. See, it needs a 5-day comment period. And then the Navajo Committee, which has to see it before the council does. And the committee is meeting on the 13th, and that's what Delegate Shepherd was looking at in posting this legislation and moving it, was to get it in the 5-day comment period so that it would be able to go before the Navajo Committee on March 13th. And if it had been held up for a couple more days, it wouldn't have met that deadline. Because right now, according to the legislation that's posted, it'll be ready for committee action on March 11th. So if they had held it up for a few more days, you know, it wouldn't have been able to go before the committee. And then it wouldn't have gone before the council. And, yeah, it was a delay tactic. And that's what Delegate Shepherd was accusing the speaker of doing.
Wow, that's interesting. Marley, we have a caller, and Francis Lester, welcome. Francis, are you got a question or a comment?
Let me listen in. We barely got in. I don't know what the conversation's about yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So, you know, I guess, you know, like everybody was so frustrated at the fact that the first one didn't go through and why that, you know, it took the steps. And now, you know, the kicker, or actually the thing that initiated what is probably what people are now suspecting, is that now it has this domino effect, because one council delegate has basically said, yes, it all happened. Marley?
Well, you know, that the position, like I had said, when the first legislation went through, the 003-14, and that's the one that didn't get the 16 votes. And if you remember, we were talking about it, and I was sure that the council would approve it, because under the law, if you're a council delegate and holding the position of speaker, you have to be in good standing. And having criminal charges of 10 charges of 10 criminal charges of bribery and one charge of conspiracy to commit bribery is pretty serious. Those are criminal charges. And it's brought by the prosecutor, who took a long time to file these complaints. It wasn't like he decided in a couple of weeks he was going to file it. I mean, they were gathering evidence. And this has been going on for several years now. And so that's, you know, having all that history, that's why I thought, okay, you know, they want to put someone in there that, you know, doesn't have that dark cloud hanging over them. And it's a reflection on what the other governments see us as, you know. Our government represents us. And I don't want to be represented
by the whole people.
On suspicion, you know. I'm not going to do business that way, you know. I don't do business that way. You know, I wouldn't do business with anyone that had any kind of criminal charges against them. I would say, wait, you know, let's wait until you get those criminal charges settled, you know. I'm not saying you're guilty. I'm not saying you're innocent. I'm just saying, you know, let's just wait, you know, and get those, you know,
right.
you need to take care of that. And that was another thing that some of the council delegates had also said to Speaker Nays is, you know, you're holding that position, you have a lot of responsibilities, duties, you deal with a lot of funding, and you represent the legislative branch, you represent the council. It takes up a lot of your time, so, you know, why don't you step down and take care of those criminal charges? And that was another point they brought up to him. And it was
yeah.
it was almost immediately, though, after that you know, they held this illegal meeting, a second one, down at the Quality Inn. And, you know, I'm still trying to find out if he approved a $300 stipend to all of those council delegates that were there on top of what they received per day for attending a council meeting. And there's just been a lot of traveling going on by committees, a lot of special committee meetings, and it makes you wonder, you know, there are people getting council delegates, elected officials getting, you know, thanked financially. You know, I appreciate your vote, and so your committee can go travel, or your committee can have another special meeting, and those kind of appearances, just especially now, you know, when you're talking about There's not even a Supreme Court building for our Navajo Nation Supreme Court. You know, we had a visit one year by the U.S. Supreme Court out here because they
exactly.
had been reading all the Supreme
yep.
Court decisions. And so they come out here and they're like expecting this, you know, nice building. I'm not talking about a palace, but at least a you know, nice building. And they're in a trailer.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I know. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that because, I mean, that's why I was like saying, you know what, is there kind of a psychological thing taking place here? We have the Office of the President, we have the Office of, you know, the Legislative Services, and then there's the the justice or the, actually the judicial branch. Kind of interesting to me. Hey, Marty, let me ask you a question. Did you ever work at the Speaker's office?
Oh, no, no. You know what? He actually came up to me after I had left the Navajo Times and said that he had heard that I wanted to work for him. And I said, well, it's you know, I don't want to work for you. I want to work for the council. If I was hired, I said, and it wouldn't be full-time, I wanted it to be under a contract that I would, you know, and you know this, Cal, if you're under a contract, you can pretty much put in there what services you're going to offer and how you're going to do them. And I said that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, I got,
scratch that question because the listener, or there was a person on Facebook who said that, asked her if she knew about the discretionary being misused when she was working at Speaker's office. So that's why I was asking, because I don't think you worked at the Speaker's office. And then he recanted later. He says, no, I meant that the question was for Karen Francis. So Karen's no longer with us, so that question doesn't apply. So I apologize. Yeah. So, any other, you know, the only thing, I mean, you heard me say wow so many times is because it's like I thought we were somewhat getting settled, right or wrong, that we are going to at least head it in some direction. But it sounds to me like we're just basically back to square one and things are not done yet, and things are going to be coming down, whatever that's going to happen, and which to me, as a Navajo citizen, I mean, I am, it is just amazing to me that, you know, what I really honestly believe, and in all cases, I'm not trying to validate what people's alleged actions are, but now we have two council delegates that have said, they did, it's all true. I did what I want. And so, you know what, with two people saying they're guilty, I mean, the light at the end of the tunnel was like the answer's all there, and now domino effect all the way across the board. And this is why that I, as a Navajo, and I'm not trying to say that I'm better than anybody, that I'm much brighter than anybody. I'm like any one of you out there. And that's one of the reasons why that I feel like that we, as a nation, we've got to step into the new era. And the new era, you know, I'm not saying it's for everybody, but at least right now there's going to be, I'm hoping, a substantial segment of the Navajo people can maybe go into becoming just like you, Marley. a business owner. By being a business owner where they don't have to rely on a boss to tell them what they should write, how they should write it, why they should write it, and when they should write it, but you're your own boss and you have your own customer base. And like in the case right now, because the Navajo Nation is the only government that is the biggest employer, our people seem to gravitate to the Navajo Nation government for any type of job, for economic sustenance, and there's all of these things that have basically shackled us to be able to go in, and once they get into office, there's all these billions and millions of dollars sitting at their fingertips. And now, these monies are there, and true they're there, and the temptation is there. However, if through correct business know-how and business application, that money can be filtered out into the community, and out into the community from the community standpoint, the community now needs to step up to be their own businesses and offer services and products so that these monies that are now piled up for temptational use, that, I don't know what else, how else to say it, for any type of abuse, can now be given in terms of contracts to the general public. You know what? It's really, from the business perspective, it's a no-brainer. And now, why that it's there is like, okay, well, I'm not saying, but it sounds like Raymond Joe said it did happen. Here's money. If I give you money, as long as you give me money. And so the opportunity there is that, you know what, it might be because that we just don't know how to apply the business and get these monies out into the community. It's an unfortunate thing. I'm not saying, I'm not putting people down, I'm not looking down. It's just because that's how we were set up. And so the time is now. And so, you know, I don't know how many people would agree with me on that, but that's really what it is. I see it happen here in Salt Lake City, Utah. You know what? And you know, there's the government. They bring in the money, but they know how to get it out into the community. And how to get out into the community is that there's business that they can give these contracts to. I mean, you're a writer, Marley. You're an incredible writer. You have all this experience. Why not? In your case, you know what? Every department needs an article written. A public press release. Because you work for a department doesn't necessarily mean you might philosophically go in there and be sucked under a certain regime. You're a contract. You know, like even for me, I've had people say to me, oh, gee, because you work with that administration, you must be with them. No, I just happened to offer a service that when they were in that administration, I got a contract. And I did work for that person, too. But you know what? It's their choice, and I offer a service. See, that's where the total misunderstanding about this whole business thing. So, anyway, Marley, I can go on and on about this thing. But nonetheless, here we are. We're addressing the speaker's position again. So,
well, you know, what you're talking about, Cal, is I think I have thought about for a long time, because I keep doing these stories about corruption in the government, and it bothers me. It makes me sad. I don't get any kind of joy out of it, because I know what these when they're there and they're doing their annual budget, how they go through the process. I mean, that soaks up a lot of money in itself. And in the end, they come out with a budget, and they have all these great words, and this is what the money is going to go for, and then you find out that the money didn't get there. And you see it with veterans housing. You see it with social services. You see it with the school clothing program. The only way is what you're talking about, is to get these contracts out, and there needs to be There has to be a better way to hire the contracts. To hire the workers to do performance ratings on them. There just has to be, because it's so massive in what is happening in our government, all the way from the financial services, which is supposed to take care of the funds, to the Auditor General. I mean, I agree with you totally.
Yeah. Well, you know, the contracts are going out. But I tell you what, the contracts are not going to the Navajo business owners, because there's this, you know what, we have about, what, 350,000 Navajos throughout the United States on and off reservation. And if you look at statistically, you go to the Business Regulatory Department and you get the source list. And that source list, what, there's only about 300 to 400 registered business? Now, right there's the story in itself. If we only had maybe at least a quarter of our population being in business and whatever, selling toilet papers to, you know, paint brushes and so forth, I know that we can do much better than that, to professional, to large corporations, and all sorts of things. You know what? That in itself, then it creates a segment of the Navajo society where the Navajo Nation can give to its own people. Now, and so the dollar stays within the community, at least it cycles one time rather than right now. Those contracts are going to non-Navajos, and how that a lot of our elected leaders, and I will say that they can sit here, and it's not just this administration, I've seen it for a long time, and that is that how many Navajo money is now going off the Navajo Nation. Now, so why that I'm saying this and use this as an example is simply because that here we are, we have leaders who, and chapters, now we're hearing that, you know, that there's money being taken at chapter levels, or I don't, you know, Bill Donovan was he had just covered a segment of here about, I mean, are we just all so tired of this discretionary fund? Are we just all so tired of money mismanagement? Are we just all so tired of there's all this money at the chapter levels or at the central government, and we don't know how to get it out into the general public? And it's like, you know what, we have this heap of money over here, but there's nothing over here. I mean, like, I go back to my Shibija over there in Twisado area, and I left 35 years ago. I drive back on there. The only change that really there is maybe a few more homes and a couple more horse corral and a telephone line. We still have dirt road. There's no, you know, it's still what it is. And you know what? So what's going on? We talk about economic development.
It's like what happened with the capital improvement projects for the chapters. It didn't get approved. I mean, and it hasn't been approved since the mid-80s. And it's because you have it's wrapped up in politics. It's totally, you know, bogged down in politics. It gets to the council floor, and next thing you know, they're just ripping it apart. Well, I want my legislation, and there are laws. The Supreme Court had to step in and say, because at one point under the ADA, they kept waiving all these laws, and they were just, you know, and former council delegate Young Div Tom was famous for it. I mean, he was proud of it, that he could just jump up from the council floor and say, I want, you know, $50,000 for this chapter project, and they're wheeling and dealing, and next thing you know, somebody else adds theirs onto it, and it's supposed to be a emergency funding for summer youth employment at the chapter. And next thing you know, it has all of these legislations attached to it, you know, and it gets passed, because the prime reason that it went before them was for summer youth employment. And so who's going to vote against that after you have all these other things attached to it? And so the Supreme Court finally stepped in and says you cannot waive those financial laws which stop that kind of funding. And it did, because they tried to do that from the Council floor again just, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I was reporting on it. And there was this the debate was, you know, well, the Supreme Court said, you know, we can't waive the Appropriations Act. And the Appropriations Act says that if you're going to have a CIP project, it has to go through this process. And did these projects that are coming from the floor, did they go through the process? Well, no. Well, then we have to, you know, we can't waive the law. Oh, yeah, we can waive the law. The Supreme Court said that we just have to let the people know. They don't have to approve it. We don't need their approval. All we have to do is say, hey, we're going to waive the law. Then we complied with the law. I mean, they were talking like that. I had them on videotape. And yeah. It's just like, this is so shameless. And the people just need to get hold of their government. There needs to be some laws in there where you need to just get rid of political appointees. That's the thing. We have political appointees over the Division of Health, Division of Public Safety, which is where the police is, and you have it over Environmental Protection, you have it in Financial Office, you have it in the Tax Office, you have it in Human Resources, where we have the veterans and personnel, you have it in the Department of the whole Department of Justice is nothing but political appointees. And so, I mean, all those, and I've said this for years, one year I actually was so frustrated, I actually wrote an editorial saying, you know, get rid of the political appointees, they should all be under contract. You know, give them a year contract, you know, and every quarter, you know, see what they're doing, and, you know, and
yeah.
If you're under contract, you have to prove yourself. But if you're a political appointee,
we have
you have to prove what, you know?
Yeah, Marley, we have a caller, and Francis, you've been listening for a while. What do you want to throw your two cents in?
Okay. I agree with both of you to what is being done, and inside the policy of Title 12 with the Navajo Nation Council. And one of the things that, just like the other guest is speaking, she talks about the council being doing as they please. When Title II was amended, right when the council came in, when they were doing the, when they were breaking down the 12 committees to 8 committees, right then and there, when they were doing that, a lot of that policy that they forwarded.
Are you? Oh, his telephone line dropped. So I hope Francis called back in. You know, he was on a roll. So anyway, Marley. Anyway, go ahead while I try to get him back on.
Yeah. You know, when he was talking about the Title II amendments and what this new council did by changing all of those laws to deal with 24 council delegates, that was a huge overhaul of the legislative branch. And people at that time, you know, and it was true. You know, President Shirley, at that time, there wasn't really any clear planning of what was going to happen if you reduce the council to 24. It was sort of like, oh, yeah, you know, once you reduce the council to 24, all our problems will be solved. And it was, I didn't believe it. It's like, wait a minute, you know, you have, all you're doing is just reducing a number. You're not doing anything about reducing these issues, these problems in government. you're not dealing with that. All you're doing is just you have different number of players, like you have a game of cards. You can have seven cards set, or you can have five cards set.
The 88 had that certain power, and so now you only have 24 that have the same power.
Yeah, and you know, when I see it, it's like, okay, you know, so, you know, the...
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's not saving any money. How do you know it's saving any money? I know, because I see how many meetings they're having and where the money is going. And you have people traveling to New York and all over the place, you know, for, I mean, the NAN, they spend a lot of money on Navajo Transitional Energy Company and just the purchase of the mine and that whole thing. I mean, there was a lot of traveling going on.
Marley, we got about 3 minutes left, and we have a caller. Caller, you got a question or a comment?
Come on.
Yes. On Speaker Nays, if he steps down before the vote comes up.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is David Bordy, and I'm calling from St. Michael's.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, getting back to Speaker Nays, if he steps down before the votes come up, can he still do that, you know, trying to supposedly save face, so to speak? Thank you.
Marley.
Oh, yeah, he can do that. And that would certainly, you know, save some money also. They wouldn't have to have a special council meeting, and they would just, you know, appoint someone to be in his position, and, you know, that would be something that would really help also him, you know. It would save face, you know, just to at least say, you know, well, you know, I'm going to step down for, you know, the best interests of the people, and it is.
Yeah. Well, we have about 1 minute left, so anything in closing in about 15 seconds, Marley?
I just like to encourage the listeners to stay informed about what's happening with their government, because it is their government. And whatever their government does, they do in their name. They do in my name, they do in your name, Cal. I mean, when people say, where are you from, when I'm traveling around, I say, you know, the Navajo Nation. I'm Diné. And immediately, you know, is that in Arizona? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that crazy Arizona state government, you know, what are they doing now, you know? And they know what state governments are doing, and they know about what's happening on the Navajo Nation, too.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Marley. Thank you for calling in and joining us this evening. And I really, really appreciate you calling and giving us updates. And love your Facebook page, love your website. And so I encourage people to call in. And we will talk to you next week. Lana.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, Nat.
You're listening to Navajo Digital Radio. Politics on the Navajo Nation. The radio show that's raising standards of Navajo intellect. A real paradigm shift. No double talk, no fool. Navajo graphic design and advertising agency, CalNez Designs.